Good evening. This is Blog Talk Radio. Narrative. Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay for the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women married to gay men. Each week, my co-hostess Misty Hall and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. So, good evening, Misty. How are you?
Good evening. I'm doing okay. Still recovering from yet another cold, but doing okay. How are you tonight?
How's the weather in Florida right now?
The weather is actually pretty good. It has already started to get crazy hot, but we've had a cool spell, I guess you could say, and it's nice. And we've got some much-needed rain, so the weather is nice right now. In a few weeks from now, it's going to be blazing. So you
right,
can remind me of all the times when you were having the 10-foot of snow and I was having warm weather. So in a few weeks,
yeah.
It's been like, you know, turn
and
it around.
It's really something, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, it is.
I'll be sitting there in that heat, and I'll be sitting and thinking, thank goodness I'm not in Florida in the heat.
Exactly.
Here in Philadelphia, it's been pretty nice weather. We're in our 50s this week, so spring is in the air for sure. And tonight we're waiting for a guest to come on to join us, Dr. Francina Barbetta. And Francina is a therapist here in the Philadelphia area who specializes in marriages with straight wives, having been one herself. And she's also the author of a book called A Pebble in His Shoe. So while we're waiting for Francine, anything, comments you'd like to make, Misty?
Wow, let's see. Just always running into more people that's got more stories of knowing someone that is or was married to a gay man, a straight and gay relationship. So I think it is getting more coverage, and I'm always glad to hear that. I think you've been a big part of that, thanks to you, that just dedicate so much time, so much attention to this cause that so many people overlook. So it's always a pleasure to know when you hear of people being helped or hear of people talking about it, things like that. So that always helps me. That puts a smile on my face. Not that I want it to happen to anyone, but the reason it puts a smile on my face is because I know people know where to reach for help. You know, 12 years ago, I didn't know where to reach for help. You know, I just went it alone. I didn't know about you and what you were doing because I wasn't so savvy with the Internet, with Google and all those great things. And now, thanks to those great things, it's made our world much smaller, and women out there can get help because you need the support. You know, we always think we're strong, and I think our culture, American culture especially, tries to make us think we can do everything ourselves, self-help. You know, if you're not a woman doing 10 million things, you're just not enough. So that's so unfortunate when it comes to something like this. I don't care how strong you are, you need support in this type of situation. It doesn't make you weak. You just have to have courage to reach out for support. And I think more people are reaching out for support.
I think we're very lucky that we have our guest on, Francine. How are you? Hello? Francine?
My name is Deborah.
Deborah, I'm sorry. We're waiting for our guest, but that's quite all right, Deborah. How are you?
I'm a guest. Actually, my first time listening in. I'm sorry.
That's no problem. We're happy to hear from you. How are you, Deborah?
Oh, confused. Yes.
Well, I think that most people who are going through this are confused. And did you have any specific questions you'd like to ask us?
I don't really know where to start. I didn't even realize. I definitely thought that I was crazy, and I definitely thought that I was alone. It took a lot for me. In fact, when I told my very best friend, as far as my woman friend, because I always thought my husband was my best friend. But when I told her, I thought for sure, I was so nervous, and I thought for sure she would say, you know, you're the craziest human in the world. And she didn't, and in fact, she is the one who found this website. I went on to Amazon.com recently. It never occurred to me because I found signs like things on the internet and that seem suspicious. A lot of other things that have seemed suspicious, and it never occurred to me to, you know, type into Amazon.com. I think my husband is gay, because I thought it would, of course, come up with nothing. And then I couldn't believe it when it came up with all of these things. And Bonnie's book was the first one that I ordered. And the one with 27 stories.
Straight-wide, scattered life.
Yes, yes. And my heart goes out to every woman going through this, and I'm sure there are men that go through this who find out their wives, you know, their wives are living a double life. But I don't know what to ask. I actually didn't expect to speak.
Well, that's all right, Deborah. You can listen, because we're going to have our guest Francine come on, and then if you have questions, stay on and you can ask her, okay?
Okay. Is this Bonnie?
Yeah, this is Bonnie.
Oh, my God, Bonnie. Oh, it's so nice to talk to you.
Same
the
here, Deb.
The friend that's been writing emails
I know.
To you, her
I'm
name
so glad
is Debbie. Yes.
Right. Well, hold on just 1 second, Deb, okay? Let's get Francine to join us.
Okay, thank you.
All right, stay on. Francine?
Yes. Hi, Bonnie.
Hi, how are you?
Great, how are you?
Good. You're here with me and Misty, and also we have a caller, Deborah, who's joining us.
Hi, Misty. Hi, Deborah. Thanks for having me on the show.
Hello.
Thank you. We're really happy to have you on here, Francine. It's been a while.
Yes.
And I know that our audience always loves listening to you and the advice that you give.
Thank you.
And most importantly, we want to talk about your new life for a moment.
Okay. I'd love to talk about that.
Okay. Because the last time you were on the show, you were telling us how you had met your soulmate.
Yes.
And you were about to engage in marriage, correct?
Yeah, that's probably right. It was before I got married. I got married on November 14th. And it was the most perfect day, and I'm very, very happy. I was single for 10 years after I divorced my husband, and I'm happy to say there is life after divorcing your gay husband.
Yeah, life after gay husband, as I always call it.
Yes.
Where you can meet your soulmate and live happily ever after.
Yes.
Just when you think that it's not possible, right?
That's right. That's right. You know, I really came to a place.
I think part of it is really being ready.
Yes. Well, I came to a place in my life where I was just really content with where I was. And, you know, I was happy with my work and I was happy with my friends. And, I had established a nice lifestyle for myself. So I wasn't really actively looking, and it just happened, and it was right. When it's right, you know it.
You know what? I think that's so true, and that I tell this to women also, that it took me 11 years after my marriage to be ready to meet someone.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't because I was, you know, cold and bitter or mourning and
right.
grief. You know, I had passed all that, but
right.
I was really happy in my new life and didn't really feel that I needed to have someone in my life. I had to rediscover me.
Exactly.
And find happiness in myself, because, and maybe you can talk a little bit about this too, because Misty and I bring this up a lot, that if you can learn to love yourself and be happy with who you are, it won't matter what kind of relationship you find in the future, it's going to be the wrong one.
Yes, that's absolutely true. And, you know, I was at a place where I said, you know, I'll never remarry again, not because I was bitter about marriage, but because I just didn't feel like I would need that or I want that, and I was very happy, and I guess I just got to a place of being content with myself and the life that I had made. And I think it is very important for women to get to that place before they meet somebody else. And certainly they need to go through the healing process, which, you know, as you said, it took 11 years for you. It took 10 years for me. You know, it's a very difficult thing to get over, dealing with, you know, the loss of a marriage, and any marriage, let alone a gay-straight marriage, which is, I think, more difficult.
Francine, I know that during my healing period, I don't speak for everyone, but, you know, for myself, it wasn't so much about the healing as it was the rebuilding of who I was.
Mm-hmm.
That I had lost so much of my self-esteem, my sexual esteem, and I just wasn't the same person I was prior to that marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And I really had been emotionally really beaten down to a pulp, and I really needed to find myself again. Did you find
right.
that at all?
Yes, and, you know, in my practice, when someone gets divorced, it can be from a straight divorce or gay straight divorce, I always ask them, like, if you were to go on Match.com or eHarmony, what would you say your interests were? And so many women have difficulty with that. What are their hobbies? Because they get so, first of all, engrossed in being a wife and a mother that they forget. And then when they go through a divorce from a gay man, it is so consuming, they really lose track of themselves. So to be able to identify what are your hobbies, what are your interests, what do you like to do, sometimes you have to tap back into when you were 20 years old and remember what was life like back then. So
right, and I think it's more so with our straight wives, because even more so than in a straight marriage,
mm-hmm.
when you're married to a gay man and you're constantly working to try to make something work that can't, and you're trying
mm-hmm.
to be someone who will please a husband who can never be pleased,
mm-hmm.
that I think that you lose who you are by trying to become who he wants you to be, or you think he wants you to be, just so he can love you enough.
Mm-hmm.
And you really do lose who you are. I mean, I lost who I was, for sure.
Right.
Do you feel that you lost some of that through your marriage?
I don't personally feel that I lost a lot of who I was. I know, you know, I kept going to school throughout my marriage, and that's something that I really wanted to do. I maintained a lot of my friendships throughout my marriage.
But you also had a really good marriage for a while, right?
I did have a really good marriage for a while. Of course, you know, as we all know, there was something missing, but we were best friends, and we had a lot of fun together. We traveled a lot together. We had a business together. So we were very involved with our kids together. So we were, you know, really actively involved until, you know, he really started to come out, and then all hell broke loose.
So maybe you can backtrack a little bit and tell people about your story, about the meaning of your husband.
Well, you know, I met my husband when I was 17, right after high school on the Jersey Shore. And we sort of had a storybook romance. We dated for a couple years through college. We got married in a big cathedral. We had a wonderful wedding. We went on our honeymoon. We came back and we started to live our life, but he was always working, and when I look back in retrospect, I see his need to be successful really was to repress his sexuality. So what happened was is that, you know, we built this life together. We built a very, very fine, beautiful life. We had two children, and when he finally reached where he wanted to be with his business and success, he started to identify what he called a pebble in his shoe, which is the title of my book, A Pebble in His Shoe. And then, you know, as we know, all hell broke loose after that. He became abusive. He started drinking. He became an alcoholic. He later went on to become a drug addict. He turned to male prostitutes. He really transformed before my eyes and everyone else's eyes who knew him. And then eventually, it ended in a very abusive situation where I had to leave. I called the police. They waited for me while me and my children left the house. I filed for divorce, and 5 years later, he committed suicide.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been 6 years since he's committed suicide, and basically, you know, I started to heal after the marriage ended, which was in 2000, and we actually started to become friends again. And then in 2005, after he committed suicide, you know, I needed time to heal from that. So that was harder, of course.
Now,
so,
during the time that he was going, you know, before his death, I mean, did you have signs that he was in that state of mind?
You know, I write about it in my book that he always said he threatened to commit suicide. And I went to his parents, and they said, oh, he's just trying to get your attention. He would never do that. And then when he was in a rational state of mind, he told me that he would not do it. But then when he was in a manic stage, he would threaten to commit suicide a lot. So, of course, now when a couple comes to me who's in that situation and the husband is threatening, I just come at it from a very different perspective. I never take it lightly. I always take it seriously. And I think that these men that are coming out are tormented. They're conflicted. They have repressed a lot of their feelings. They've lived a false life. And between drugs and alcohol and the conflict that is in their mind, many of them become suicidal. So,
how about when men use that, though, to keep a woman in a marriage?
Well, see, that's what I was told by professional people, that he was using me to, he was using that to keep me in the marriage, but then he really went and did it. So it's, you know, it's hard to tell. I mean, we never can really know whether somebody's saying it to try to manipulate someone or they really are feeling that.
But
it's a very touchy subject.
Tell me if you feel that you would advise women in that situation, that you can't be allowing somebody to emotionally manipulate you in that way. You know, you have to encourage them to get help, but you don't have to stop.
No, I don't think women should be emotionally manipulated by that statement, but what I would recommend is that they seek out help through therapists, through their clergy, through family members, whoever they can trust, because nobody should be going through that alone. And I have suggested to clients that they tell their husbands, if you're going to commit suicide, I'm calling the police, because the police will come and they will, you know, involuntarily put them in a hospital for a couple of days. They'll commit them.
Mm-hmm.
So no woman should have to go through that alone or be manipulated by that.
I know that. This may be a touchy question also, but certainly, you know, you were 5 years out of your marriage when this happened, and you had already been rebuilding a friendship with your husband, your ex-husband, you know, and also, as far as the children were concerned, you know, building that relationship. But in any way, did that create any guilt within you?
No. That's a very good question, and I feel fine handling that. You know, I did not feel guilty because my husband and I came to a very good understanding. He was remorseful. I forgave him for what he did, for the way he treated me. I didn't, you know, obviously it's not about being gay because he couldn't help that, but certainly for the way, the abusive way that he treated me, we did come to a peaceful place. And I felt and I know in my heart that I did everything humanly possible for him. I gave him a lot of chances. I tried to understand him, and I'm glad now in retrospect that I did that, because if he would have died and I did not do that, I think I would have felt guilty. But I did not. I felt that he was very, very sick when he died, and that he's in a peaceful place now, a better place for him.
Now, did he exhibit any of that behavior in your early part of your marriage?
Never, never. He was very homophobic. He was very traditional. He never exhibited any signs of depression, any signs of mania, any signs of being interested in men. nothing for 15 years.
Mm-hmm. And maybe you could share a little bit with people, you know, because I know when they read your book, they're going to feel as compelled as I am. It's so beautifully written. And,
Thank you.
Yeah, it really is the most moving story, Pebble in His Shoe, and that I suggest everybody go to Amazon. They can buy it there, right?
Yes, and it's now available on e-books. So you can download it on your iPod or your iPad or your Kindle. Yeah. And it's also on exlibris.com or barnesandnoble.com.
Right. It's very accessible. Or you can go to my website at gayhusbands.com and click into Francine's link there and you can get information. But the thing is that, you know, at what point did he tell you that, you know, he's been having these feelings?
Well,
I mean, did he say he always struggled with it?
No, I identified it first. You know, we had a business together. We had a very successful catering business. We catered for a large company that had been owned by Mike Bloomberg, who's the mayor of New York.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a close friend of ours who was the manager of our business. Well, my husband went into a store similar to like a Pottery Barn, Pier 1 type store, and he met a guy, and he came home and he told me that he met this guy who would be really appropriate to be the manager of our business. And I said, Frank, we already have a manager. Our very close friend is our manager. And from that moment, he became obsessed with this guy. He wanted to go to the gym with him. He wanted to go to dinner with him. And I went to the store to meet this guy who he kept talking about. And I realized immediately he was gay. He just had gay written all over him. And I'm not trying to be stereotypical here, but there are some people you just know are gay. And he was. And when I came home and I said, I met your friend today and he's gay, he said, you don't know what you're talking about. You're crazy. He's not gay. How would you say that? And you know, I described all the reasons why I thought he was, which, of course, in the end, it turned out that the guy was gay. Anyway, I really believe that my husband began to fall in love with him. And over a three-year period, he absolutely denied that he was gay. Then he said that he had thought he was gay in high school, and then he fell in love with me, so he thought he wasn't gay anymore, and then he told me that he thought he might be bisexual, and then he went back to being gay, and then he said he was straight, and Bonnie, this went on for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, up to the time I left him, he denied being gay, and then a couple months after our marriage ended, he actually went to Vermont with his male lover, who was not the guy he had met in the store. It was another one. And he signed a civil union. And I said, well, now you're joining your lives. Are you going to tell me you're not gay now? And, of course, he said, well, no, I am gay. So it really came months, close to a year after our final, you know, separation.
Did he ever tell you anything about that other man that he was so obsessed with?
He did tell me that he felt like he was falling in love with him, but, of course, he denied a sexual relationship with him, which I absolutely do not believe.
Mm-hmm.
In retrospect, I believe he probably had sex with men throughout our marriage.
Mm-hmm. How was your sex life, if you don't mind me asking?
You know, it wasn't bad. When we had sex, it was very nice. It was warm. It was comfortable. But in retrospect, there's nothing like having sex with a straight man, which, it, you know, is amazing when you have the right lover, when you have a man that really wants to be with you and desires you. With my husband, I was always the sexual aggressor. I think he could have went months, years, whatever, and not pursued sex. But when I pursued sex, then he would agree to it because I think he thought that was the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't bad. It really wasn't. But nothing like it is being with a straight man.
Did you think there was anything unusual about that at the time?
Well, yes, I always thought it was unusual that he did not want to pursue me. In fact,
mm-hmm.
when I would pursue him, say we had sex on a Monday, and I said, you know, this is great, let's do it again tomorrow, he
mm-hmm.
would say, oh, my God, you're a nymphomaniac. There's something
mm-hmm.
wrong with you. And I
mm-hmm.
used to say, you know, I can't believe you're saying this, because I think most men would be really happy that their wife would want to have sex with them. And he would really ridicule me for that.
Now, did you feel at that point there was something not right about that?
Yeah, I did. I did, which is why when he became obsessed with this guy and I went and saw the guy, it just was like a light bulb went on, like, oh, my God, he must be gay. And then I started putting all the pieces of the puzzle together. You know, why hasn't he pursued me sexually? Why has he never been the aggressor? Why, you know, why now is he so interested in this guy? And then I started putting pieces together, like, over the years there were other men that he wanted to go into business with, and those things never materialized. But I realized he probably had crushes on some of those guys.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, in retrospect, would you say those were red flags for people to look out for?
Yeah, they are. You know what, Bonnie? I think that when someone marries you, you don't think they could possibly be gay. Well, obviously you know this. You think, well, why would they marry me if they're gay?
Mm-hmm.
That's not in your vocabulary, especially in, you know, the early 1980s when we got married. It was, you know, there was no reason why, you know, why would someone marry you if they're gay? It didn't make sense. So you don't actively look for reasons to make your husband gay. And then when they're homophobic, you think, well, God, they don't even like being around gay people. So this doesn't make sense.
And I have found that with many gay men that, you know, being homophobic, you know, is one of the signs that I tell women that, you know, if a man is too homophobic, you have to really wonder why.
Absolutely.
A lot
yes.
of times, you know, sometimes I used to think it was just because they're trying to cover up, but then I realized later on it's also a form of self-hatred.
Right.
You know, because they don't want to be gay.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's much easier to, you know, not what is than to accept what it is.
Right.
How was his family as far as accepting it? Because, you know, he came from a pretty conservative family, right?
Yeah, his family was totally supportive of him. And has completely abandoned me and his children.
Mm-hmm. Did that surprise you?
Very much. You know, I could understand, you know, I left him. They probably felt that I abandoned him, which I did not. I was being abused, which is the reason I had to leave. But I could never understand why they would not support his children, which are their grandchildren.
Mm-hmm. And can you talk a little bit about that? Because we have so many women in that situation, Francine, that they feel it's not only bad enough their marriage is ending, but in-laws who they were really close with, I don't know how your relationship was.
Yeah, I was pretty close with them.
Right, that you really felt you were a family. All of a sudden, you're not only losing your husband, but you're losing, you know, part of the family.
Right. Well,
why do you
know
think that they do that?
I can't speak for every family, but I know in my situation, my husband became very manipulative, and he used to tell his family that they were his blood and that they needed to support him. And I am very close with my family, so I got support from them. And most of our marriage, he was closer to my family than his family. But, of course, he knew that my family was not going to continue to support him. So I think he really played his family to the place of saying, you know, look, you need to stick by me. You need to, you know, which is fine. And I understood that. I just did not understand that after he died, that they would still abandon their grandchildren.
Yeah.
So I think, you know,
I have
a hard time
understanding that anyway, because, you know, I can understand them not wanting to be involved with you.
Right.
Or not just you per se, but with the wife, you know, when
right,
the husband
right.
leaves. But I just never get why they just turn their backs on their grandchildren.
Right. You know, I often think that it might be difficult for them to look at them because they must see their son in their eyes. So I think sometimes in any divorce, it's hard for grandparents to connect with their grandchildren because it's too painful. It's almost better to just deny it and separate, which of course is not the right thing to do, but for some people it has to be done that way.
Right. And we do have other women who have, you know, in-laws who are really supportive of them.
Sure. And that's nice.
Mine weren't, but, you know.
Yours weren't.
Other women weren't. Mm-hmm. But it just always amazes me that you have grandchildren that you love and you're there for and you see them growing up and then all of a sudden, poof, they're gone.
Right.
As if they never existed.
Right.
But even when you were, you know, becoming more friendly with him, that didn't change anything either, right?
No, I don't think he ever told them that we were becoming that friendly.
Mm-hmm.
That was my guess.
Mm-hmm. So were your, you know, children at the time that, you know, the whole marriage ended, how old were they?
They were 11 and 13.
Okay. So you had two children just embracing, you know, their teenage years.
Yes.
And did they know the reason for the breakup of the marriage?
Yes. They not only knew the reason, they were very supportive of their dad being gay. That was never an issue for them,
mm-hmm.
which made me very happy. I didn't want that to be an issue. What became an issue for them was his drinking and his outrageous verbal and physical abuse. And
mm-hmm.
in fact, towards the end, my older daughter said, Mom, you have to leave him.
Mm-hmm.
You have to. You know, my children were very supportive of the separation.
But were they aware that he was gay at that point?
Yes. They heard many arguments.
Mm-hmm. And that's another thing that I always tell parents, that you just can't hide these things from the children that they know.
Right. Now, let me just back up on that one, Bonnie. They never heard him say, I'm gay. They
mm-hmm.
never heard that. They heard many arguments that revolved around him possibly being gay. And
mm-hmm.
they saw that he was hanging out with gay men because he would bring these gay guys around. So they
mm-hmm.
were very smart young girls. And they knew. They knew what was going on.
I always tell parents that staying together for the sake of the children is not a reason to stay together
mm-hmm.
when you don't have a good marriage. And, in fact, I was just writing a piece about that right now, that I grew up in a family where, you know, I had two straight parents who were very miserable. You know,
mm-hmm.
they were not in a happy marriage. They didn't divorce till I was 16. But, you know, for so many years they thought we were sleeping. They waited till, you know, we fell asleep, my siblings and I, and before they started, you know, having their discussions at night. But inevitably, it always came back to the children because I guess they kind of lost focus on blaming themselves for everything, so they would throw the children into the mix.
Mm.
And we really grew up, you know, hearing, knowing. You know, you certainly know when your parents aren't happy. And I always say that, you know, women who tell me, well, I put on a good front. I mean, how good a front do you think women can really put on when they're really not happy? Do you think they can? They can hide something like this for years?
No, I think that sense of depression, misery, it comes
mm-hmm.
out. It comes out. Women become bitter. Children need to see their parents in a loving, healthy relationship. Yeah, I agree. I don't personally think people should stay together for the children. I think there are some extenuating circumstances when there's maybe a very sick child or you know, the financial strain is going to put the family in danger. Maybe there can be some alternatives to be worked out. But if there's a way that they can, you know, there's a lot of research that shows that if people get divorced and the children's financial status doesn't change and they don't hear the parents fighting anymore, then the children will be a lot better off. So,
well, I was even writing in this, you know, piece that I'm doing for a book, that when my family split up, you know, we grew up in on the main line. We grew up very wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I grew up in a split-level beautiful home with all the, you know, beautiful trappings that come with it.
Mm-hmm.
And when my parents split up, you know, I was the oldest of five children. I had three much younger siblings, you know, at least a minimum of 10 years younger and younger than that than me.
Mm-hmm.
But I grew up with all the fancy trappings, but never in a happy home.
Mm-hmm.
And when my father left, we lost everything, and my mother, you know, was put back into a two-bedroom apartment with, you know, five children.
Mm-hmm.
She was sleeping on the couch, and we were all sharing rooms. And yet, as horrible as, you know, losing all the financial security was, we were so much happier than having to listen to all the infighting that was going on between the two of them, that even if we couldn't be financially secure, we, at least we were more emotionally secure. And my sisters grew up with a much better outlook than I did, you know, because they didn't grow up with all of that.
So do you think your mother was happier?
I think that emotionally she was happier. You know, financially she had a struggle. But certainly that she had, you know, there wasn't the constant fighting going on and the unhappiness.
Right.
So I think she was certainly, you know, happier in that respect. You know, I think.
Yeah, because sometimes that can backfire if a woman is crying or sad all the time. But if your mother was truly happier, and then that must have permeated through you and your siblings. So that was a great result.
Well, it was really too late for me at that point. You know, I was almost an adult myself.
Oh.
And I grew up with such distorted values from both of them because it was a marriage where neither one was happy. They were both seeing other people, you know, and we would, you know, like you say, children are very aware, even though parents think, you know, we're hiding things.
Mm-hmm.
Children, and today I find that children are so much more aware with technology, with a computer. I mean, I have so many young people who write to me telling me that they know about their father's homosexuality because they found stuff on the internet or they found stuff on his computer because they are very computer, you know, savvy. And
it's such a different world. Yes.
Very different world than when I was growing up.
Right. I mean,
and yet, it's you know, so much more easily accessible information now. But even back then, without the computer,
right?
You know, I certainly knew that my parents weren't happy.
Right.
And
I mean,
really
now every other TV show. Huh?
And I really didn't have role modeling as far as my own future because I had a distorted view of what marriage was.
Right.
Do you find that to be true?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Where there's unhappiness?
Yeah, I think kids need good role models. When I have a couple that comes in for counseling, I always ask them who were their role models, and it's amazing. There are very few role models out there for young couples starting out. I think that we, as women, need to take that responsibility to provide our children with good role models. You know, I feel bad that my children have seen their mom single for 10 years, and but now they see me very happy, and they see that it was worth the wait for me because I could have married somebody in the last 10 years that I wasn't truly in love with. Now they see that I'm really in love, and they're young women, and I think it's wonderful for them to be able to observe what me and my husband have now.
And it's a totally different kind of relationship, correct?
Oh, my God, it's amazing. I never really thought that this could exist. You know, you dream about it, you know it's out there somewhere, but somewhere along the line you don't think it's going to be reality. And it's equal, it's mutual, it's loving, it's respectful. You know, it's fun. It's very sexually liberating. So, you know, this is what marriage is supposed to be.
And that's what I keep telling women, that life isn't meant to be this complicated. You know, that's
right.
Not what marriage is about.
Right.
Do you agree
it's
with
not,
that?
I do agree. It should not be this complicated. You know, I remember when I was going through my own anxiety about whether to separate from my husband. And I actually went to the pastor of our church, and he said to me, "Francine, this is not the way God intended it to be." And, you know, that was so comforting for me to hear that. Like, you don't need to stay trapped in this horrible marriage because it's supposed to be easy. It's supposed to be loving.
Francine, let me ask you a question. Were you, as a family, kind of on the religious side as far as going to church?
We did go to church. Every Sunday we went to church. I was actually going to read to you something from my book.
I'd love to hear it.
About that. That's funny you said that. This was after Frank died, the morning of his funeral. On May 18th, 2005, the morning of Frank's funeral, a small yellow bird sat in the tree outside my bedroom window. I stood by that window and stared at it for the longest time. Its freedom, its joy, its spirit flying from tree to tree. I thought of all the days and nights that I worried that it would come down to this, but then quickly negated that thought with the hope and promise that Frank would one day become comfortable in his own skin. The funeral service in the Catholic Church where we celebrated Mass so regularly was the way Frank lived his life, me and the children on one side, and his family and his gay partner on the other side. Hundreds of people gathered there to mourn his loss. Half of the people who attended were there to console Frank's daughters and myself. They were the family, friends, neighbors, teachers, classmates, and acquaintances that we had met over a 28-year period of our lives together. They knew Frank's hearty laugh and his beautiful smile. They remembered his generous spirit, his philanthropic nature, his charismatic personality, his talents as a chef, his charm, and his grace. The other half were members of his immediate family and the friends that he had come to know in the last couple years. I didn't know what they knew about Frank because he had become a stranger to all of us who had loved him so much. The Frank we knew had been gone for a long time. As the soloist sang a song I selected entitled Be Not Afraid, I realized that the church was divided between straight and gay. I sat and thought of the irony that a natural division occurred here, just like it had occurred in Frank's life.
Wow, that's really beautifully stated.
Thank you.
Well, like everything else in your book is.
Thank you.
I mean, you just write so beautifully with such, you know, feeling that I think that everybody who would read your book would really benefit from it.
Thanks,
because they
Bonnie.
Would see their own lives in your story. You know, all these stories are different, and yet they're all the same.
Mm-hmm.
Because even if the stories are different, the emotional impact is always the same.
Right.
But I guess I wanted to get back to the church, only because I don't know if you've, I'm sure you found some of this in your counseling and your therapy,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, you found a priest who was able to encourage you to move on in your life.
Right.
What do you do with women who have religious counselors who tell them that, you know, they have to learn to live with this and that, you know, divorce isn't an option?
Well, you know, I really don't hear that so much anymore. I think at this point, with all the notoriety that straight spouses have gotten, I think I would be surprised if I heard of a priest or minister or rabbi that told their parishioner to stay in the marriage with a gay man. I would probably suggest that they find another minister or priest, because this is not the way it is intended to be. And a marriage cannot be healthy if it's this way.
I know that so many of our women, you know, that write to me are part of, you know, the Christian kinds of movements throughout the country,
mm-hmm.
where they're not living in a big city where there's liberal types of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And they are told that, you know, divorce is a sin and, you know, make the best of it and you have to pray for your husband that he's going to change. What about praying away the gay? What's your thoughts on that?
I think it's impossible. Can't pray away the gay.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe in that. I know there are a lot of people that do.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, I believe homosexuality is biological. It's genetic.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anybody asks to be gay. I don't think anybody chooses to be gay. And I think that's what your viewers need to know, that no one would choose to be gay. So, therefore, it makes sense that it is biological or genetic.
Mm-hmm.
So I, you know, I don't think it can change. I think if someone's bisexual, that's different. They have the ability I like to say to people that bisexuality is sort of like the best of both worlds. People are given, you know, that choice. The world is their oyster. They can fall in love with anybody. But if someone's truly a homosexual, they can't change that. That's my opinion.
Right. And for me, you know, I don't believe in bisexuality. I mean, that's my opinion.
Okay.
It goes to me that, you know, it's a lot of times I think men are emotionally straight but physically gay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't want to be gay, and so they would like to have, you know, a family, a wife, children, acceptability, social acceptability, family acceptability. But to me, if you want to have sex with a man, it is what it is.
What do you think of all the women now that are having sex with men and women? It's becoming quite common for women to be bisexual.
You know, I really don't like to talk about that because I'm not familiar enough with women.
Okay.
I know with men it's a gay thing.
Mm-hmm.
With women, I don't think that you can necessarily categorize it exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had, you know, women tell me, you know, I know women who have been with other women, but, mm-hmm. you know, they also like to be with men. And I'm just not familiar enough with it, so
mm-hmm.
I don't like to pretend like I am. I think that, you know, maybe there's a difference, but when it comes to men, I think it's a totally different thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I say to women, does it really matter? You have to decide what you can live with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't want to live with a man who wants to have sex with a man. Even
well,
if he wants to have sex with me.
Well, that's what it comes down to, yes.
You know,
yeah,
I think you can call it by any other name, asexual, bisexual, metrosexual.
Mm-hmm.
If you have to put a name in front of sexual, then I think that it's gay. I mean, because heterosexual men don't go around saying, oh, hi, I'm a heterosexual. You know, but those people who have to categorize themselves into some kind of sexual thing, it means that they want a penis, and to me, if you want a penis, it's gay. And
well,
then,
if someone's
know,
asexual, they're not having sex with anyone.
So they say. I mean, I've had a lot of gay men who tell me they're asexual, but they want a man.
Mm-hmm.
And even if somebody really is honestly asexual, I don't think that's a healthy relationship for a woman to be involved in.
Mm-hmm.
I think anything that strips away a woman's sense of sexual esteem is not healthy for her. It's taking away, you know, what you are as a woman.
Right.
And I think that every woman deserves to be loved as a woman, and as a woman needs to be loved. I mean, that's my opinion. You know, you may not agree.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I do believe in bisexuality, and I you know, that's just an area we disagree on. But
well, how about with bisexuality? Shouldn't they just be happy living with their wives then?
Well, yeah, that would be the point. If you're bisexual, but you want to be with a man, if you're a man and you want to be with a man, and then your wife has to decide whether she can live with that. I mean, personally, I would not want to have that option for me. But
right, I always say that my ego is too fragile to have to live like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm saying if somebody's truly bisexual, it's almost like, do you believe that there can be fidelity in a marriage? In a straight marriage?
I do. But it's the same thing with a straight man. A straight man has the option of straying and being with other women.
Right,
you
but
know?
Do you believe there are men that don't stray?
Who are bisexual?
No, who are straight.
Like if you have a straight husband.
Like, you're married to a straight man now. I'm sure you're not thinking that he's going to go straying on you, right?
Absolutely not, but it's possible. I mean, anything
possible.
Is possible, right?
No, it's possible, but it's not the foremost. You wouldn't think it'd be the foremost thing he's thinking about.
No, you wouldn't.
And,
absolutely
and hopefully,
not.
I mean, I know couples who I really do believe that there's been total fidelity throughout their, you know, marriage with them.
And that's a wonderful marriage. That's what I hope to have. But really, the statistics are only 25% of people have those marriages. 50%
okay,
of marriages end in divorce.
Right.
25% of marriages are loving and beautiful and healthy. And the other
uh-huh.
quarter stay together because of money, the kids, you know, certain stresses.
Right. But
more
what I'm
couples.
Saying, you know, as far as the fidelity is concerned, that when you're living with somebody who's bisexual, and this is what I tell men, if you're truly bisexual, that means you can, you know, you should be able to truly love your wife and feel sexually satisfied with her. And not feel the need to have to be with a man and go outside your marriage.
Absolutely. I
That's
agree with that.
That's what bisexual means to me.
Yes, you have the ability to fall in love and have sex with either sex.
Right, but I haven't found that, have you?
I have worked with a couple couples who were able to maintain that. How long they will be able to continue that, I don't know. But I have had a couple couples in my practice over the years that have been able to do that. And I've met with the husbands alone and really have asked them sincerely, please answer me, you know, are you able to maintain this? And they say they are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think each person is unique. There are some bisexual men that may be faithful to their wives, but they lure after other men. That can be very uncomfortable. Or they're always looking at gay porn. That can be uncomfortable. So,
right. And
you
that's
know,
why I say it's all a matter of what you can live with.
Right.
And it's kind of like, there. You know, we were talking about this a couple of weeks ago, that I know men who are cross-dressers.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that this is not something that I personally would feel comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not making a judgment on it. I'm just saying mm-hmm. that for myself, I wouldn't want to live with someone who was wearing women's clothes.
Mm-hmm.
Or getting dressed up or sexually stimulated by it.
Right.
That doesn't mean it's wrong. It's just not right for me.
And it doesn't mean they're gay.
Pardon me?
It doesn't mean they're gay.
Oh, no. I would say about 90% of cross-dressers are not gay.
Right.
But the point is that I still wouldn't feel comfortable with it. You know,
right.
I still wouldn't want my husband dressing up in women's clothes and getting,
right.
you know, turned on by that.
Right.
But there are a lot of women who couldn't care less. I mean,
right.
you know, a couple of years ago, a cruise where there were 200 couples, you know, with cross-dressers, and the woman couldn't care less. So I guess it's all, you know, what you can live with to a degree.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, you know, everybody's unique. I personally wouldn't want that either. But, you know, there are some people. You know, the other thing, Bonnie, I have found there are a lot of women that are not that interested in sex. You know, I often thought that if I was the type of woman that didn't care about sex, I would probably still be married to my husband. You know, because if you know, I have a couple friends who they do not care about sex, and they haven't had sex with their husbands in years. And I'm constantly saying to them, "Well, how do you do that? You know, why do you put up with that? That's not healthy." And they say, "Well, it works for us. You know, I'm not interested in sex, and he's not either. So, but." That wouldn't work for me. So.
Right, but I think a lot of times, you know, I have found this to be true too, that, you know, a lot of men are not necessarily great in bed,
mm-hmm.
even straight men.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of what I call sexual duds out there.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And they don't know how to stimulate their wives to make them feel interested in sex.
Right.
So I think that maybe if a woman had the right lover to start with,
right,
if someone who was interested in her satisfaction instead of just his or making it an effort.
Right.
I think that's probably why a lot of people, you know, especially people who are our age or maybe a little bit older, you know, or even younger. But, you know, today I think that people are more in tune to sex than when we were growing up.
Mm-hmm.
Even though you and I are a couple of years apart, not much.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I kind of grew up in the years of, you know, sexual revolution in the 60s and, you know, where anything would go and everything was supposed to feel good.
Right.
But, you know, I think that changed a lot, and people kind of went back into more conservative ways of looking at sex.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that if you don't have a fulfilling sexual partner, it doesn't matter if you're straight, gay, bi, or otherwise, asexual, non-sexual, heterosexual, metrosexual. You know, they're just, like I say, a lot of straight guys I've been with who just aren't that good in sex. You know, they just don't have the technique.
Right, and if it's important for you, you need to find that. If it's not important, then you figure something else out in your marriage.
Well, I think it becomes unimportant because you don't find sex as fulfilling because you just don't know the difference.
Yeah.
And you think this is what sex is. So it doesn't matter to you because it's just not that fulfilling. Misty, what do you think on that? Misty?
Sorry, say that again. I'm back. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I was taking it off mute and I didn't hear all the question. I'm so sorry.
That's okay. We were talking about straight men who may not be good in bed, you know, that maybe could discourage women from wanting to having sex with them.
Well, I think there's all sorts of reasons when it comes to that. You know, I think, as you just said, a little earlier, there's some straight men that are just emotionally cold. I mean, you know, what I think, not everyone is sexually healthy. And when I mean that, not everyone knows how to practice sex in a healthy way. And that meaning maybe they're not good at it. Maybe they have their own hang-ups about it. Maybe they heard things as a child. Maybe they heard, you know, depending on if they grew up in a certain type of religion, that it's only for procreation. I mean, there's all sorts of interesting things around sex when it should be something beautiful and something healthy. It doesn't matter if you're married to someone gay or straight. It doesn't mean you're going to have a great sex life. You know, it can be either way because there's lots of things. You know, so many cultures, sex is considered taboo, and it's not something we talk a lot about. And I think it's very unfortunate. I think there should always be sex education, you know, all through school. It's important. I mean, that's how children are born. That's how intimate relationships are. That's, you know, something that's supposed to be wonderful between husband and wife or partners. And it's not always great for some people for different reasons. Sometimes it's medication. Sometimes it's health-related. And I've worked with a lot of women. Sometimes it's trauma-related, and I'm sure that could go for men as well. I've never worked with men in terms of sexual trauma, but I've worked with a lot of women in terms of sexual trauma. So there's so many different issues.
Yeah, I think that's true, too, Francine, that there are women, you know, they say that 25% of all women were at some point of their life, you know, had some kind of sexual molestation issue, either with, you know, with men who were either relatives. I mean, the statistics are just amazing to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how many women have had, you know, poor sexual experiences growing up. And maybe that has something to factor in with it also, so that, you know, they don't care about sex because they just never had, you know, a healthy understanding of how wonderful sex could be.
Right. You know, this is an interesting...
Let me ask you this. After your marriage was over, I mean, was sex an issue for you for a while? Or you just it didn't matter that much?
No, it was not an issue because I had a very wonderful lover for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it was there for me.
Okay.
Yeah. But this is an interesting note. My husband, I found out later, had been abused as a child. So, like I said earlier, he was never the aggressor with sex. And after we divorced and we started to become friends, he said to me, he said, you know, Fran, I'm the same way sexually in this relationship with a man. He said, I'm never the aggressor, and it's not as exciting to me as I thought it would be. So I thought that was very interesting that, you know, even though he wanted to be in a relationship with a man because that's what he craved and needed emotionally, you know, physically it wasn't that different for him. He didn't really.
That really is interesting.
I thought that was very interesting that, you know, he didn't really change his ways from being with a woman to a man.
But I think that's another good point maybe you can, you know, address, because a lot of women don't understand this. They think that gay sex is just, you know, or, you know, when a husband's gay, it's just about sex. It's not just about sex, right?
No, it's not just about sex. It's wanting, it's longing to be close to a man. It's long for a man. Some men feel that they're never really, gay men feel that they're never really understood unless they have another man to hold them, to touch them, to look into their eyes. It's not always about the act of sex for a man. They want to connect with a man on an emotional, intellectual, spiritual level.
And I think that's something a lot of women can't understand because they thought they had that relationship with their husbands.
Right. And when you have a best friendship with your husband, you believe you have that, and you do have that. And that's why it's so difficult for a gay straight couple to divorce, because most of the time they still love each other. They're not in love the way a husband and a wife should be, but they do still really love each other.
Uh-huh.
Whereas a straight couple divorcing, they usually hate each other when they're getting divorced.
And
so
I say that makes a very major big difference, because so many of our women, you know, who are suddenly blindsided by homosexuality entering into their lives, they still love their husbands. You know, their husbands have had years to struggle with this, but the wives really just find out. And, you know, it just doesn't come that easy to understand this or accept it.
Right.
You know, I always tell that to our men. You know, that took you a lifetime of struggling to understand yourself.
Right.
You can't expect that your wife is going to wake up the next day after you tell her and say, okay, honey, I understand. She won't
understand. Right.
So what advice do you have for couples who are in this situation? Now, I do want to let people know that no matter where you're listening from, that Francine can do counseling. You know, she lives in the Bucks County, Pennsylvania area, but you do counseling by phone also, correct?
Sure, yes.
And you can always get her information and access it from my website at www.gayhusbands.com. On the right-hand side of the cover page there, there's a links area, and you'll see Francine's information there, so you can feel free to get in touch with her if you need, you know, therapy. And, but do you work with couples who want to stay together?
I do work with a lot of couples who want to stay together and want to have alternatives to their marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you, in these bad economic times, there are more and more couples that really cannot afford to separate. I'm finding that more and more frequent with gay, straight couples and completely straight couples. So they're trying to find out, they're trying to work on alternatives, you know, maybe separate bedrooms, maybe open marriages. There's different things to help people because of the bad economic time right now. So the one thing I would suggest is that if you're going through a divorce, just know that divorce is the most ugliest time in a person's life. It brings out horrible things in each other. But when the dust settles, the divorce papers are signed, two people who were often best friends can often try to work on forming some sort of a friendship once again. I know you did it with your husband. I did it with my husband. You know, it can happen, but it usually can't happen until the dust settles and the papers are signed.
I agree. And what I always tell women is that as hard as it is, and believe me, I know it is hard when you're going through it, but you always have to keep in mind, first of all, the importance of the stability for the children and, you know, what their needs are as far as having a good relationship with their father. I tell women, if you want to vent and you want to, you know, sit and bash your ex-husband, that's fine, but you shouldn't be doing that in front of your children.
Absolutely.
That's why you have therapists, counselors, support groups online. You know, they can reach out anywhere else. But, you know, children are comprised of two parents, and when you're sitting there knocking their dad, you know, they feel that part of them is being knocked.
Yes.
No matter, even if you don't intentionally mean to do that.
Right.
But, you know, children, like I say, are so sensitive as to what's going on that really, you know, talking like that in front of children is very unhealthy for them. And I know it's hard sometimes because we're looking for allies. And, you know, our children, we want them to be our allies. But, you know, this is not the right game to play with them. You know, we have to really do what's best for them emotionally. And even though, you know, I had a very long, difficult struggle with my ex-husband for many, many years until we could become friends. We weren't always friends. But I always learned how to bite my tongue so that I didn't have to say anything negative in front of the kids. I always wanted them to have that feeling that their father was a hero because I wanted them to feel good about themselves.
Well, that was the right thing to do.
Right, I had nothing to do with him, but I wanted them to feel good about them. And if they felt they had a bad father, they would feel there's something, you know, wrong internally with them.
Yes.
So I really work with women to, you know, try to get to that point where if you can communicate. But a lot of times it's really hard with some of these guys, Francine, because their husbands just are off in another world.
Yes.
And a lot of times just turn their backs and move on. But, you know, sometimes I think that's just, you know, in the early phases or early years that sometimes that they go through that and then they try to come back and try to be, you know, fathers again.
Yes, they do.
I feel like a lot of the burden is really left with the mothers. Do you feel that way?
It is.
Do you have any other advice on that? I think couples could go for divorce counseling. I mean, I think that's really important.
And that's a very healthy thing to do. I recommend that a lot.
And that's something you really work with, right?
Yes, absolutely.
So,
certainly,
you know,
makes it a more peaceful transition.
Absolutely. You know, look, there's always going to be a lot of problems and a lot of unhappiness. Mm-hmm. You know, because the ending of a marriage is never a happy situation. Even a bad
right.
marriage is hard to leave
right. mm-hmm.
because of all the consequences that come about. But if you can at least make it palatable, you know, or at least for the children's sake, have a sense of family unity outside the family unit.
Yes.
As I always say, you know, that's always, I think, the best way to do it.
It's always best to put the children as the priority and to do what is best for them.
Which doesn't mean staying together.
That's not what I meant. Right.
Right, exactly.
Right.
It means being able to co-parent your children. Right.
Right.
But, you know, being able to co-parent them together, I think, is always the best of everything.
Yes.
So do you find you have success with that?
I do. I work with couples a lot on that area.
Right. So if you're a couple and you really want to get that help from Francine, once again, you know, please go to my website and you can get all of her information.
Thank you, Bonnie.
Just so happy that you're so happy.
Thank you.
And I want you to just give some encouraging words before you go to women who feel that there is no life after gay husbandry.
Well, I'm here to say I've been toying with the idea of adding another chapter to my book about how there is life after this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, seek and you shall find, and heal yourself first, and, you know, think about forgiveness, and then your heart will be open to finding your true love. So,
mm-hmm.
yes, I definitely believe that there's peace and contentment out there, and you can find it within yourself, and then you will attract others to you. Yeah.
Well, I would like to thank you so much for, you know, joining us tonight. And let's just announce again Francine's book, A Pebble in His Shoe. And Francine, I'll just spell your last name, B-A-R-B. Oh, did you change your name?
No.
B-A-R-B-E-T-T-A. Francine, you can find her on Amazon.com, or you can write to me at bomk@AOL, and I'll make sure you get a hold of that, you know, link for her
book.
You're
a sweetheart, Bonnie. Thank you so much for
thank
your
you so much,
support.
And we hope you'll join us again in a few months.
Absolutely.
All right.
All right.
Take care.
All right. Thank
Have
you.
A great
Good
week.
Luck to everyone.
All right. Thanks, Francine.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Good night. Bye-bye.
Well, Misty?
Yes, Bonnie.
I think it's always wonderful when we have Francine joining us.
It is.
Insight into things that sometimes, you know, we lose our insight on. But, Deb, are you still with us? Deborah, are you still with us?
Yes.
So, how did you feel about that conversation?
Well, I got a lot out of it. For me, I guess I can say we didn't have children. There was always the promise that we were going to have children, and then it kept getting put off and getting put off. And but there were things like such as, you know, you know, is there life after this, especially. And to hear that there is good,
mm-hmm.
but how I just for me, and I just read in one of your, I think it was chapter 8 or 9, that someone wrote. That it made her so mad when people said, oh, well, it's not like, you know, it was abusive or anything. It's not like he, you know, beat the crap out of you. But it is, but in my case anyway, I am 99.9% sure that I have been a beard from day one. That.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that he, I was like fish in a barrel because I had been in a very long relationship with a completely heterosexual man, a little too heterosexual. But at least he had been honest with that. He was a confirmed bachelor, blah, blah, blah. But I couldn't take the thought, you know, that, you know, he was a skirt chaser. And so one day I woke up and said, I can't do that anymore. I made a decision that if I turned a certain age, I would have a child on my own. I would put all of my bearings into my job. I was in investment banking. And then one night I met who is a man who is now my husband. And as soon as I met him, I said, oh, God, no. I made the decision that I'm, you know, going to live a single life and be a single mother. But I did fall madly in love with him.
Uh-huh.
And so for him, it was very easy. And in a way, I created a monster because I told him early on that I was very much in love with him. I mean, he's got, you know, he's very interested in interesting things and we get along. But in the now nearly 12 years that we have been married, we have had sex approximately 11 times.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always, and I have always said, but I have always said, what's her name? I want to know what her name is. You are
mm-hmm.
young. There is no, you know, who is it? Who are you having an affair with? Just tell me. I can't take it anymore. Am I too fat? Am I too skinny? Are my breasts too small? Is my, you know, turkey neck, you know, too big? And I even though I am so angry not to have had a child, you know, there's still time to adopt an older child.
Mm-hmm.
But it was all a lie. Everything has been a lie, and the way that I first figured it out was because he forgot to clear the history of the Google search that he had been on. And when I saw it, I couldn't believe it. And through these arguments, when I would say, what's her name? You know, why don't you want to have sex with me? Am I grotesque and everything? You know, it was always, you're so irrational. You're so, why are you keeping me awake with this? It's so stupid. And I'm probably not making much sense. It's just that now that I realize that it's true, I'm so torn because honestly, there are good parts to him, but he goes into rages, and his favorite thing, and I hope that I'm not going to hurt your ears, but his favorite thing to call me is a stupid fucking cunt. And, you know, and that, of course, shuts me down.
Right. Well,
because,
first of all, even if you weren't gay, though, Deb, I mean, why would you want to be with a man who calls you those kind of names?
Well, yeah, because,
I mean, that's
yeah.
so disrespectful to you or to any woman to be called that way. Let me ask you a question. You have a child. Do you have a daughter?
No, we didn't. It never came to that.
Oh, I thought
he
you had a child
promised.
From before.
Yeah, mm-hmm. No, it always came to that. I have just been thinking that I could now, you know, if I can move on, which, you know, it's just, and he recently told me, because I said, all right, I found some other things, and then he said, all right, you know, so I've been confused, and he used the word, well, I dabbled in it will tease me and, you know, he will say, you know, oh, tonight, you know, I really would like to have sex. He never says make love. I would really like to have sex with you, but still I will get, you know, or used to get very excited about it. And then all of a sudden, you know, he doesn't feel well, his back hurts, or he picks a fight. Usually he picks a fight, and then it's my fault that we didn't have sex.
Well, you know, it might be a blessing in disguise, though, Deb, because I can't tell you how many of our women have sexually transmitted diseases from their husbands who are dabbling out there.
And one thing that happened was I had watched an Oprah show where the man said, evidently he had been on her show before and he claimed he wasn't gay, but then he came back and said, oh, yeah, well, you know, I was lying. And if you ask your mate if they're on the down low and they know what that means, then more than likely they are. And I thought, well, that's just ridiculous. And then I figured out what the Oprah had in. And I said to my husband, David, are you on the down low? And he said, no, I'm not on the down low. Why would you ask me that? As if it were just like something that, you know, I'm like, oh, my God, he does know what it means. And,
yeah, because now you have a confession from him now. You know what he's about, and you know that it's healthy for you. This is a toxic relationship, and you're really cheating yourself by staying in here because no woman has to be degraded that way.
Yeah,
right?
And it was interesting the way that you were, in part of the conversation, you were talking about the priest and everything. I did go to my priest, and I talked to him about this. And I was astounded. I'll tell you what, I nearly fell off of the chair because even my priest did tell me this is not a marriage. This is not a marriage at all. God does not, you know, it's just not. And I couldn't believe it because I was thinking, oh, my God, like, the floor is going to open up and I'm going to go straight to hell because I'm telling this priest that I'm pretty certain my husband is gay and he probably does feel sick when it comes to the end of the night where supposedly we're going to have sex because, of course, we're the woman, you know? But he did tell me I have been seeing a psychiatrist because I have been very depressed because it seems like no matter what I do, I can never do the right thing. And there's always, and I remember looking over at him, it wasn't too long ago, I am now not with him. We're selling a house in Miami, and supposedly the closing is coming up. And Bonnie, I have to tell you, he is so psyched that I'm here and that my stay has been elongated. And that's not normal. That is not a husband and a wife.
Well,
it is normal
for a gay husband, though, Deb.
Yes, that's what I know. I thank you for saying it to me out loud because that's what I've been thinking. And the most passionate he is when he's dropping me off at the airport to leave.
Because
now he can have
a good time because you're not there.
Yes.
His life is now, you know, he's free, and that's what he's looking for.
Yes.
And that's why he's happy, because you're leaving.
Yeah, and he has...
And I think it's your job now to make him really happy and just leave. Because by doing that, you'll be making yourself happy. I mean, you have to want more for yourself than this. You know, as I keep saying, life was never meant to be this complicated. you know, if you're in a relationship.
I love that, too. That was the other thing I wanted to mention to you that really hit me as I was listening in. It's not supposed to be, and my priest said that, too. Life is, we only have a short time here on Earth. But the thing is that then I'll turn around and it's like, but he has these good qualities and maybe I could just live as roommates with him, but I can't.
See, here's the whole thing. A lot of our gay husbands have very good qualities. I mean, that's why we fell in love with them to start with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nobody's saying that they're all bad, horrible, disgusting people except for Misty's ex-husband. He was really horrible.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah. But he was, like, you know, not the usual typical person. He was, like, beyond that. But the point is that we fall in love with these men because they have good qualities, and we do love them. But that doesn't make a marriage. You know, marriage is so much more. A marriage is having somebody love you the way you need to be loved. He's not loving you that way.
No, and I know that he doesn't, and the therapist pointed out, he said, don't you see, and he went through his notes, David showcases you because he needs a beard, because whenever he's gotten awards, he'll call me onto the stage and say, oh, I could have never done this without my wife. And then
cover.
Of course, I have always been thinking, ooh, I'm going to be made love to tonight. Woo-hoo.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get home, and he's like, oh, I'm so tired. And I'm like, wait a second, what in the world just happened here?
Misty, what's your outlook on this marriage?
I'm sorry?
I said, what is your outlook on this marriage?
Mine?
No, not yours.
Oh.
I was asking Misty.
Oh, you're asking me. I didn't hear that.
Mm-hmm.
I say save your life, save your sanity, because it doesn't sound like it's something that's working for you, and get support. You have to get support. You can't do these things alone. This is a very hard decision. If you're not happy, it's like money just said,
so
you can't, life's not supposed to be this complicated.
I have thought, and he's told me, you know, you're insane, you're paranoid, you're passive-aggressive. And I'm like, I know when I'm passive-aggressive. I know when to, but I'm not passive-aggressive. And I've told him, you know, and sanity, I have felt, until my dear friend Debbie, who I actually was, Bonnie, and I have to tell you, I thought she went a little over the line, you know, writing you without asking me. But then I realized, wow, I can't believe it. This other human really believes me, because I have really thought that this didn't go on. I was alone. I was insane. I wasn't sexually attractive. I was a stupid fucking cunt. And, you know, I, you know, couldn't do anything right. There's always an argument about something else, especially if it's time for, God forbid, I have figured out, if I come on to him and say, wow, hey, maybe tonight, you know, we could do a bubble bath. I realized, and I will say maybe this is passive-aggressive, is that I have tested it, and sure enough, a fight ensues.
Uh-huh.
Just so, and I figured it's like it goes like clockwork. But there's so many good parts about him, but I can't. I've thought about doing the roommate thing and being celibate for the rest of my life. But I can't. I just can't do it.
How old are you, Deb?
I can't. I am 46.
Well, you have so many good years ahead of you, and you've already lost so many years in back of you. You need to now retake over your life and make a plan so that you can have the happiness that you deserve, because you're not happy now. And it doesn't matter that he's a nice guy. He's a nice guy who's a gay man, and he's cheating on you. It's that simple.
question. Yeah, I question everything I do, and I'm terrified. Oh my God! If one thing is out of order, but I have figured out recently. But since I saw the things on the internet, and then when you knew it being on the down low meant, it's like, oh yeah, anything's just making up anything to have an argument. He will tell me that. I never told him that, or he never told me that. And, I mean, I'm not the brightest bear in the woods, but come on,
Right. I think you're gaining knowledge, and that's our goal for all women. Wouldn't you say so, Misty?
Absolutely.
That you have to gain the knowledge first, and then you have to learn what to do with that knowledge so that you can find your own happiness in life. And Debbie, how long are you going to be in Miami?
I'm going to be here for the closing date is supposed to be, which is really interesting because I actually don't need to be here for the closing because
mm-hmm.
the company that David works for is taking care of it. But he's mm-hmm. like, oh, no, you should stay through the closing to make sure everything goes okay. And that's not going to be until May. And so I'm going to be here through the rest of April, which means you gotta laugh or you gotta cry, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of in one way laughing and crying because I see him doing this big happy dance because his birthday is the 11th of April. So
uh-huh.
he gets to go out with whoever it is that he's, or whichever one he's dating.
Because he's going to have fun with, and it won't be you. And that's the point. But anyway, Deb, we don't mean to cut you off, but now we've come to the end of our show.
Okay.
And our show is going to be cut off. But Deb, I hope we've given you some insight as far as, what you need to do next.
More than you know. God bless you. And I really want to add to your next book, if I can. And
absolutely.
God bless you. And I pray with both of you and everyone that anything that we can do so that other people don't go through this.
Right, and remember, you're not alone. And think about joining my online support group. Because you'll find a lot of women who will give you the support that you need. So just drop me a note, and I'll send you the information, okay?
Okay. God bless you. God
all right,
bless
sweetie, and we'll talk to you again.
Okay.
And good luck.
Bye.
Keep in touch.
Bye.
All right, take care.
Thank you. Bye.
You're so welcome. So, Misty?
Yes.
It's been another great week. Hope that, women who hear these stories realize what steps they have to take. And thank you so much for joining our show tonight. And if you want more information, just go to my website at the website is gayhusbands.com. And if you'd like to go to Misty's website, tell them Misty, mistyhall.com, mistyhall.com. And you can see Misty's beautiful website and her, coaching and counseling. And next week, we're going to be on here with Carol from the Straight Spouse Network. Carol's always a wonderful guest, so please be listening to us next week. Misty, have a wonderful week, and you can say what you always say.
Good night and love to all.
All right. Good night, everybody, and love to you all. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.